Hi all, and welcome back to the second hour. That was Judas Priest breaking the law, and we have a couple of people who are telling us how they're going to break the Cabal's law coming up shortly. Let me just go through. Drake, do you want to say anything else before I bring John and Gerard on?
No, bring them on. Bring them on.
All right, here we go. Hi, Gerard.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you, sir?
Very good. And nice to be here, you guys. Good to hear from you.
Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing, Thomas and Drake? Good to be back again. Thanks for having us.
Oh, you're welcome. Any time, as you know. Right, John. Can you give us some updates of what's been going on with the common law grand jury in the last 5 or 6 weeks since you were on?
Yeah, we've been moving across the nation in leaps and bounds. Today we constituted the 25th state, so we're at the 50% mark across the nation. So 25 states have constituted the common law grand jury in every single one of their counties. The newspapers' ads have been up, people have been invited, and whoever came. You know, as Jefferson says, we don't have government by the majority, we have government by the majority that participates. But we are working very quick. We've gotten word from 16 more states that anticipate to be constituted by the 25th of this month, which will put us at 41 states by 7/25/14. You know, that's July 25th, 14. So we're really doing great. The message is getting out. We do need more people. You know, right now we are kind of skeleton across the nation. We got quite a few people involved, but we have 3,142 counties to fill. And just so people really understand exactly what we're doing, because I think a lot of people misunderstand, you know, we're doing something that nobody else has tried yet. The people who have been trying to initiate grand juries over the past, I'd say, 20 years or so, they pretty much all failed. I know there's one down in Florida that has been continuing for a while, but, you know, they're not really getting out there with too many things. But other than that one, you know, there's been a lot in California that tried it, Michigan, Missouri, different places, and most of them failed. One of the problems was they didn't understand the process and the procedures of the court. That was a major problem. They didn't know how to file the papers, a true bill, and where, you know, where to file it and how to even write them up correctly. One of the other things that became a problem is that, you know, you can't create a grand jury and have 25 people sitting on that grand jury and not leave. This is the people's job. People have got to sit on this. They've got to be called, and then they have to be dispersed, and the next group comes in. And, you know, we'll have to figure things out as we go, but in my thinking, people should be called in for a week, maybe 6 days if necessary, to get to a certain point, to get certain cases done, and then they need to leave, and another group of people need to come in. Just like a trial jury, you don't have the same person or the same group coming through all the time. It's got to be, you know, people pulled out of the pool within the county or the federal district that the trial is taking place in. So they're being tried by a jury of their peers, and that's the process. So what we have done, and we've worked diligently to come to understand how things work, but we're creating the administrative process. Right now, the state controls the administrative process, or the federal government controls the administrative process in the federal courts. And that means the wolf is in charge of the hen house. That cannot be. In the United States versus Williams, U.S. Supreme Court ruling back in 92, Scalia, writing for the majority, made clear that, and he was responding back off of past court cases, but that the people are responsible for the administration and whatever it is that they decide to do, okay, as long as they don't trample upon someone else's unalienable rights, and whatever the grand jury decides to do, indict or not is the key thing, or file what's called a bill of information, but whatever they decide to do, then the United States Supreme Court themselves cannot second guess it. And by the way, a bill of information is if you see a problem somewhere in let's say on a large scale where there's laws being broken and things need to be investigated, maybe on a higher level or a more sophisticated level where the grand jury may not be capable of investigating certain things for because maybe it's very sophisticated or whatever the case may be, what the grand jury does is they write a bill of information. And when they file that bill of information, that is to cause for an investigation to be embarked onto and to investigate that under and with the grand jury's, watch. So that's what we're doing. So we're looking for four administrators in every county across the nation. And, of course, there are some counties that are larger. Let's take the Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, and down in New York. They may require 8 or 10 or 12 administrators in each one of those counties because it's got a high populated area. Same thing in Los Angeles and Detroit and different places like that. But generally speaking, it's four administrators in every county. They become and we call them administrators because they're going to administrate the process of the juries. And so when people come in and they're called, they'll be called by that group. They will come in, and then they will get an orientation. The government spends 8 hours or one day with these people to tell them, to orientate them, to prepare them for the job that they're about to embark onto. And, of course, they're given instructions that is beneficial to the government. We, the people, need to take that job over, and we need to give them instructions that is beneficial to justice and not to the government. Again, our foundation that we build upon is a sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. And this is what we're going to teach those people that they have to do. They need to get to decide what the law is, whether the law is righteous or not to begin with, that they even break it. But they get to decide both the facts and the law of the case, and they also get to decide on whatever the penalty for that is to be. And they're always to be looking into the injured party to see once how they might be able to restore them. And they're also to act upon two premises that one is that in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. And the second is that for every injury, there must be a remedy. So those are maxims. And those are the two major maxims that we will be teaching the people. We wrote a book, a small booklet. It's about the same size as a pocket constitution book that you might have, about the same number of pages, same size. And basically what it does, it goes through a lot of Supreme Court rulings. It touches some parts in the Constitution. We try to make it very simple and clear on what the law is. And we lay it out in this booklet. And, of course, they would get that. And everybody we would come in contact with, we would give them those booklets so that they understand the process. But now we can have justice when we have a system that's run by the people and not by the wolves that are in charge of the hen house. We have discovered here in New York and we've talked about this numerous times, and that is that the entire process, the entire judicial process is corrupt. They are guilty, ultimately, of RICO because there's a lot of criminal activity. They're all making money at this thing, and it's a pretty serious problem. And every single judge in New York State has been notified of the conspiracy and been given the facts and a place where they can go into a file to look at all the facts that we've created up in one of the counties by filing an index number. So they have access to that, and we've notified them of that, and none of them done anything. We just had a federal judge, which we sent all our paperwork to. We gave him what's called a writ of mandamus, which is we the people command you, the king, that is the people, we command you. And we commanded him to require that New York State judges obey the law, particularly certain laws that they've been breaking, and to step aside and allow the people to come in and take their rightful seat in the courthouse. The federal judge instead, and we also served him with a writ of prohibition, And in that writ of prohibition, we forbidded him from making a ruling. This is not a court case. This is a writ of mandamus. We're commanding you to do something. And instead, he decided to try to make a ruling, and he moved forward to the point that he says, well, he's going to throw the case out when there is no case anyway. But he's going to throw this out unless we give him $400. And that, to me, is bribery to begin with. We made it clear that the people do not pay for justice. The United States Supreme Court has made it clear that we will not charge for justice. We do not require people to pay for justice. So whenever anybody goes into a court and they require you to pay, that to me is a bribe. That's extortion. That's a requirement to get justice when we have unalienable rights to justice. And so we came together on a national basis, a national level, and all of the counties that came in and all of the states that came in, we unanimously decided to indict this individual. And so we wrote a bill of indictment. It's called a true bill, which is a presentment, same thing as an indictment. And we filed that with the Northern District Federal Court. And a couple of days ago, we got the receipt back in the mail. They did file it. They did stamp it. They time-stamped it. It's in the file, and it's in the process of moving. And this is a great victory, to be honest with you, because we have not been able to file one within the state courts at all. We felt pretty strong we'd be able to file this in the federal court. We did. They accepted it, and they stamped it. Now, the clerk obviously is much more educated on the federal level than they are on the state levels. And the clerk understood that they didn't have the ability to make a tribunal decision. They had to do their job, and they filed the papers, and that's what they did. I do know that they took a while to do it because this was stamped on the 1st, and we just got it, I think it was 2 days ago. And so it took quite some time for them to get it to us. It should have gotten back to us in 2 days. We should have gotten back on the 3rd. But then there was a holiday, so I don't know. So maybe they were wavering about it, but they did stamp it in. And the interesting thing about this now is the fact that they realized they had to stamp it in. Now they have to act upon it. And the United States, and that's exactly what the case of the United States versus Williams is all about, is that they can't stop a case. They can't throw out a case because they disagree with it or anything. They have to obey the process and take it through the procedure. So our next step, and I think maybe in the next week we'll go and start investigating, where is the case? How come we haven't received a call? How come they didn't send us a letter to get all of the evidence that's necessary for them to go through the process? Has the judge been arrested? If he hasn't, why not? Who stopped this? That's 20 years in jail for anybody who influences others to remove, stop, or prevent a legal action from going forward. And it's 1 to 3 years for the individual who does the action under the pressure or under the direction of an authority. So that's pretty good success, and we're moving along the process.
Yes. Right. Okay. That's fantastic.
Maybe Gerard wants to add to that. I don't know.
Yeah, just a few things. You were talking about filing an information, in a case where the grand jury feels there needs to be more investigation. And there's another reason to file an information, and the government doesn't like this one. That's when the grand jury sees stuff that are not right, but it doesn't rise to the level of an indictment. So what they do, that information is a prescription that says you need to fix this. And they've argued against this because, you're ruining that government official's reputation. Well, who cares? He's a government official. If he's not running his office right, the people need to know. They make stupid arguments that the grand jury shouldn't put the names of these individuals out who are kind of doing stuff that is incompetent, not really criminal, but almost criminal, but mainly because of their incompetence. So they wanted to take that job away from the people, and they've done a pretty good job of it. The other thing is in Lysander Spooner, they talk about – now, Lysander Spooner was written in the 1800s.
And 1852, Trial by Jury is the name of the essay, yep.
Right, Trial by Jury, he says, and the jury is supposed to determine if the law that the person is being tried under is even really a law. Oh, imagine that. So they even knew then that prosecutors would bring things that were not really legal, not really lawful, that they felt was legal. And it's up to the jury to say, no, we're not going for that. So this is a big, big, you know, job. And the reason they don't like it is if the jury's come in and determined whether the law is being applied or misapplied, or if it even really should be a law, they'll lose a lot of business. You know, we got a prison industrial society. I think we moved from the military industrial, you know,
yes.
What Roosevelt was talking about, or not, who was it, about the military industrial society. We've moved to a prison industrial society now. You know,
President Truman that warned us of that? I think it was Truman that he was leaving about the military industrial complex.
Right. One of them. So now we have more people in jail per capita than any other country in the world, and that's the result of taking away the juries, you know, ruling on the law. You know, with people that want to do this, they say, "Oh, you're one of them people don't think that you got to be subject to any kind of statutes or anything." Well, what they don't realize is that's what's making them slaves, is those laws that really are no law at all, that they're enforcing illegally. So this is a very important thing. And most of the job that the grand jury will be doing is really more at public officials. It's more, you know, it's more about corruption in government. You know, I mean, we're going to do the trial juries. You know, we were never meant to have these chancery judges that were sort of judge, jury, and executioner. You know, if you're going to go to jail, you're going to lose freedoms, you're going to lose your life. It's supposed to be your peers that decide that, you know, not some guy sitting up in a black robe. You know, the only thing he's missing is the crown, you know. So this is a big threat to the system that they built up. We've learned that they're making money at every stage. Every time they bang that gavel, we've learned that money goes into their retirement accounts. Well, this is all a trap. This is why they're against the people coming into the courts and doing the right thing, because they're going to lose their gravy train, and that's why they're going to push back. So I expect that they're going to get a lot of movement to discredit us as they realize that we're not going away and we're pushed. You know, we're following the procedure that they can't ignore. All right, I yield.
I'd like to just add one other thing there, and that is that, again, back to the purpose or what exactly we're doing, which is building administrators, and the main job of the administrators, of course, is to administrate for the purpose of orientating the juries, whether it's trial or whether it's grand juries. But they are also the investigative arm of the grand jury. They're like the prosecutor, but they're working from the people's perspective. And we'll have a phone number in every county, and we'll put a directory listing up on nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll let people post it wherever they want to post this directory, so that people will have access to their grand jury. Today, you can't get access to a grand jury. You can call until you turn blue. You can talk to judges. You can talk to prosecutors. They will not allow you to go to talk to a grand jury. But we, the people, we will open the doors to the people and make it available to the people so that they can call in and make a complaint. And we can try to solve a lot of these problems right on the phone, because a lot of them are probably simple problems, being disrespectful and not getting what they need and that kind of stuff. The more serious ones, we would have to, you know, go out of the office and actually make an investigation. But you see, this will bring justice back to the people. It'll bring a process where the people will be able to believe in the courts and the justice system again, because it's the people that are running it. You can't take a person in a black robe that's elected, that thinks he's the lord of all, to sit up there and he's the servant and making decisions on the masters. That does not work in common law. Never has and never will. And that's what we need to get back to take that away.
Thank you.
Yes, go ahead.
I got two of them, actually. It's a double wham, double barrel shotgun, basically. First of all, from what we've been seeing in terms of the lack of results, no matter who tries what, and the fact that nobody feels like they have anything to be concerned about in terms of what's being done, when are we going to get our own courts and enforcement arm?
Well, the thing is we already have the courts. We've built them across the nation. We've built them in every single county. We have a courthouse. And for instance, here in New York State, we have 62 courthouses that are state, and we have the federal courthouses. And our hard-earned money, America's money, built those courthouses. Now, they have been stolen and robbed and taken over, and they're corporate run at this point. But once the people come in, you know, we're going to flip that corporation on its side, and we're going to reopen the original trust that was set up, which is the government of the people, and take control. The key thing is this. You see, once we get access into the court and we get a position in the court, in other words, we get an office space and we get a conference room where we can do the business of pulling juries together and orientating them. Once we get to that point, now we are an authority that they cannot stop. Now when we file a paper, it'll be acted upon immediately. Now when that paper is filed, and the process is like this, you know, the grand jury does not command the sheriff. The grand jury commands the judicial process or the judicial system. And so when they write a bill, a true bill, whether it be a bill of information or a bill of indictment or a bill of presentment, those are the three main bills that are filed. And once a bill is done, that is an instrument of law, and it must be obeyed upon. The United States Supreme Court has ruled numerous times on this fact, and has never been overturned, and never been able to take it away, that power away, except for they've hidden it, and they've created a facade, and it's a corporate body and not the people. But once we get in there and we get that seat and we file these papers at any given time, the judge doesn't have the tribunal powers. He is now the magistrate of the system and of the court, and he has no choice but to sign the paperwork. And part of the paperwork when you file any of these true bills is arrest warrants. And arrest warrants are put out on whoever it is that's been indicted. They must be, the sheriff's got to go out. There are no choices here. They've got to go out.
Well,
it's the mechanism.
Okay, well, the thing I'm noting is that, and I've been around the block a couple times and been with some people that really know what they're doing, and most of the actions I've seen have been consummately ignored.
Yes.
In one form
because,
or another.
Because
and
they don't have to see the courthouse.
I'm wondering what it will take to pop open the zit, so to speak, that we got in terms of the problem.
Right.
And I don't
what has happened
within the justice system. I mean, maybe augmenting it.
Yeah, well, what has happened in the past with there's been different people who have tried this. They've called themselves the people's grand jury, or they call themselves the citizens' grand jury. We're the first ones, and purposely we did this. We called ourselves the common law grand jury because we want to go back to common law. That sort of scratches at their eyeballs, so to speak, to begin with, because that's something they don't want to be bringing up and talking about. The other thing is it really takes the battle to where it belongs, common law versus equity. The United States Constitution, Article 3, I believe it's the second clause in Article 3, says that there are two courts of law in the United States. One is a court of equity and the other is a court of law. And the law of the land in Article 6, Clause 2, says that the law of the land is this Constitution and all the laws made by the United States, of course, that is in harmony with that. And all of the judges throughout all of the United States, all of the states, must obey it. Also, early on, the United States Supreme Court justices, probably because of the conversations that took place under the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, there was a conversation that went on for quite a few years in order to hammer out the Constitution, and then eventually the Bill of Rights came right after it. But one of the concerns in a debate between our founding fathers was, you know, that the courts, that the judges on the United States Supreme Court, which is the chief tribunal, they might get too powerful and they might be able to do things and kind of bring more power to the government than what was expected and originally planned by the U.S. Constitution, by the people. And so what they did early on is they created the American Jurisprudence Book. And that book basically, and it's added to by the United States Supreme Court rulings. And so they constantly are adding the additions to this. But it's a very well put together book. it really has focused in on justice and righteousness, and it has maintained the purpose of our government is, of course, to secure liberty, to secure the blessings of liberty, and to maintain the tranquility and, of course, the welfare of the states and protection and so on and so forth. There's about 5 points there. But, you see, that book is a requirement for every judge to obey. The judges are not obeying this because every court in the United States pretty much has become an equity court. So it's under equity. And ultimately, they're a chancery court. And chancery courts, the chancellors are like kings. They can actually make the law right off the bench. And that's the problem we have in America.
Okay, well, the question, I guess, is twofold. You say understand where the mistakes were made in terms of what you filed and actions taken and all that, and you are in a position to rectify the problem. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. What we've been doing is it's been I hate to use this word, but it was a progressive process that we've been going through. You know, when we started off, we had to build a momentum. And one of the first things we had to do was create an honorable system or process in order to bring the people into the system, get them involved. So one of the things we do is we do elections in the counties, and we do them multiple now, do multiple counties at a time. And so we bring we put an ad in the newspaper. We invite the public. So ads have gone into the newspapers of every single county that we've constituted, inviting them into the process. And then whoever came in, you know, we then just showing of the hands, hey, yeah, we want to bring the grand jury back into process. We put forth 30 minutes of video. There's 3 different videos we put together, 9 or 10 minutes apiece. And then it's a showing of the hands, and it's been unanimous most of the time. Once in a while, you get someone that's a rebel to what we're doing, but generally speaking, it's been unanimous. So we went to the process that was the normal. What we did was the honorable thing, and not a required thing, but an honorable thing. And in that process, it built a momentum. And once we started filing with the courts, that's when the battle began. When we filed with the courts, we knew we were going to be rejected. So we allowed them. You know, we walked to the court. The first ones to do that was New York. We went to 5 different courts in one day, and we made our rounds. And we were rejected all the way around the board. Then they did the things that we knew they would do. They always stick their feet in their mouth. They always get themselves in trouble because they think they're above the law, and they started to commit crimes. We got the evidence of those crimes. And we showed them the crimes, and we told them that, you know, we were going to go through a process of indictment if they didn't stop, and they didn't allow the people to go in, and they didn't stop. So then we did indictments. We knew that they would, we weren't sure whether they were going to reject the filing of the documents, but they did. So then we took it to the next step. We moved it into the position where we filed the papers under what's called an index number here in New York State. Now, in New York, in order to file a court case, you have to purchase an index number. That opens a file. Then once the paperwork starts to go through, you filed what's called an RJI, which is a request for judicial intervention. We didn't file the RJI. We filed for the index number for the purpose of putting the paper in. At a later point, we filed for an RJI to get it before the judge with a mandamus. They handled it as a court case instead of for what it was. So we continued to pile in the necessary paperwork and all the filing, and we had an index number, and then all of a sudden they stopped. They wouldn't let us put in no more. But they haven't removed it, so we got it into the file. That's a success because they now have paperwork that they do not want there. And so when they stopped us, we then moved it up to the federal courts. And we moved it into the federal courts. That was a really easy process. We didn't get any resistance at all. We were not pressed to pay money. We didn't pay money, but the judge brought up the money business, and then we filed an indictment for him. Now, when that indictment went in and we got a file back, that's a huge success. Maybe you don't understand how huge that is. It is in the judicial process. It's on the record. It's in the system, and it has to be acted upon. It's a requirement. It's written in the procedures and processes of law. So that's where we're at now. Now, we're pressing through all of the federal judges, and we will press through every single federal judge in the United States, and we'll do that within the next 30 days, if that's what's necessary. And somewhere there will be a judge that'll finally do something, because every once in a while you hear a good story about a judge that done the right thing. So I'm sure we'll find one. But if not, we will do a mandamus to Justice Antonin Scalia himself. We're not asking them to hear the case. We're not filing a case. We're doing a mandamus. And a mandamus says, we command you. And Justice Anton Scalia, he understands that because read his papers, not only this papers, but other papers he's written. That's where we will absolutely get success, I'm convinced. And if we don't get success there, no one will ever get success. America is gone. At least we'll know. But there's eight other judges we have to deal with. And if we have to, we will indict those judges. The United States Supreme Court, if that's necessary. We will think about that. We'll talk about that. And the people are going to have to decide whether they want to make that kind of a thing. But I would think if they're not going to obey the law, as far as I'm concerned, they need to be indicted too. But I don't think that will happen at that level.
Well, John, I'm familiar with all this, having been involved in some things. And other than some of the things that I did that were kind of obtuse toward the judicial system and certain officers of the court and all that, basically they decided that it would not be worth the hassle of what I was intent was going to do to them. And that's how I got my, quote, victories. The thing I'm looking at here is whether or not, and we can talk about this privately, I would prefer that, but on air is fine too. The seriousness of the thing is this. I have known people who have done things absolutely correctly. They followed the letter of what needed to be done, including mandamus and all these other things that you're expressing, and yet they were told there's no action going to be taken on it. We are going to ignore you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens when? And I'm going to suggest when rather than if that becomes the case. Do we then go back and start referring to specific key justices that need to be taken into custody?
Well,
or,
look,
the
pressure.
Pull our thumbs and play paperwork. This is
the pressure. Yeah, the pressure is on. That's the key. Remember, a couple of things. I don't know anybody that's done what we're doing and how we're doing it. And again, I don't know if the people who've done certain things understood the procedures. I've spoke with a couple of different grand juries out in ex-grand juries, let me call them that, out in California. I've spoke to people in Michigan and that have grand juries going. There's a grand jury out there now. I think they're there 3 years along. I mean, and it's one group of people, and it's the same people sitting on the grand jury. And that's a wrongdoing, to be honest with you. They have to shift those people. And if they don't, it's a wrongdoing. You can't monopolize the grand jury. You can't monopolize any jury. But in any event, what I have discovered with them is none of them filed the papers in the proper place. Just about all of them, most of them filed it with the prosecutor. And where do you think that went? Right into the trash can. And the other ones, some of them filed it with the judge. And where do you think that went? Went into the trash can. They didn't file it with the clerk. It's the clerk, the receiver of these bills. No one else. And it's the duty of the clerk to make sure this process goes through.
What I'm trying to get across is this. Some of these people that I know have practiced constitutional law for a number of years and finally decided they'd had enough of some of the fun and games.
Mm-hmm.
The addressment, presentation, correct places, all of that was followed to the T. And they were told there was going to be no action taken on what they were doing, period. Now,
well, that's that they should have indicted that people, et cetera.
What I'm asking you is this. I understand the problems with what I'm suggesting. However, I also understand the caveats and assets involved in terms of putting something together where the justice who is unjust is attached and removed and held for adjudication. Now, that is a big difference between throwing paperwork, round files, whatever, than doing what you're doing. Now, my understanding is also that we do not need to go through each and every last justice in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I could
right,
be
well,
wrong on that,
me...
but this was the last two people who teach constitutional law
Well, let's go through this.
I mean, I don't want to jump the gun either. I'm not
no.
trying to.
Right.
You don't
it's
have to
all
go
about
crushing justice. Them. It's a strategy that we decided to do. Look, any sheriff or any law enforcement official could step up at any time and arrest any one of the judges that we've indicted. As a matter of fact, we went in to a sheriff and said, look, if this public official removed these papers from the office, that's a crime. And it took us a little while to show him where in the law that crime was. And he finally understood. He said, I can't go arrest this particular elected official because I don't have the subpoena powers to run the investigation. He says, I have to turn this to the prosecutor, and it's up to the prosecutor how this thing is investigated. So we went from the sheriff to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor was the guy that stopped it because he didn't have the communities to do it. But here, everybody says, well, the sheriff's the highest law enforcement official. Yes, he can arrest him, but if he doesn't have a grand jury or a prosecutor who's going to uphold his arrest, right? So far, what our process is to bring that power behind the sheriff. And look, any judge can step up, or any officer, and any sheriff can step up and perform law enforcement duties. We expect them to. Will they? It depends on how bad it gets in the country. Depends on where we are when this takes place. Will we make it up to the nine justices? I hope we don't have to, because if after they fail, now you're talking about, you know, the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I don't even want to talk about that because we're not that close yet. You see, we have a lot of, they have never violated the process. When you say that these justices say we're not going to act on it, I'll guarantee you one thing. There's something in that paperwork that gave them an out, or they wouldn't do it because they had never put their own neck, their own flesh on the line. See, what we do is we come in and we put their flesh on the line and we say, if you violate this, you are liable and we're going to sue you even personally when we're done. They understand that. And so what they
have we filed suits against them?
No. Not from the standpoint of the jury yet, because the grand jury doesn't have that authority or the right to do that. The grand jury's job is either to indict or not to indict, to file a
right.
true bill or not to file a true bill. That's their job.
Understood.
As far as being in courts, we've been in courts against the IRS, and we've won very quickly. And because we put the judge's flesh on the line, we've been in state courts and won cases there, and of course in town courts and different places. And you have to put the judge's flesh on the line. We just did a case down in New York City with a habeas corpus, and they had 10 days. On day 11, they let him out of jail. They didn't have a choice because the judge's flesh was on the line. So we understand that perspective. Every time we make a move, we let the judge know this is his duty. And if he doesn't perform his duty, the United States Supreme Court has already ruled numerous times that that's violence against the Constitution and therefore violence against the people, and that's a violation of the people's unalienable rights at large as a whole. You see, this is the pressure we're piling upon them.
You
got to understand that we started with 150 people in New York, and now at this point we are many thousands across the state. We have about 3,000 registered people, but we literally have tens of thousands of people that are involved with us at one point, in one way or another. And I think a lot of people, once we get to a certain point, it's going to be a landslide of people coming into the system. And anybody who wants to join us now and get into this thing, we really can use the help, nationallibertyalliance.org. But the key thing is this. Look it. Once we get to the certain point, the pressure is building, is building, is building. We went up against 300 judges in New York State. Now, we didn't indict every single one of them. We only indicted 11 judges and two clerks. And now we're moving that paperwork. Since the paperwork went through in the federal court, now we're moving that paperwork into the federal court. After all, it's a constitutional issue, but it belongs in the federal court. So we're going to move the indictment this week into the federal court of those 11 judges and two clerks. Now, they're going to have something to think about what they're going to do and how they're going to go forward with this. Now, we've also got seals. Every state that has unified has got what's called a unified state seal, which means all of the counties have come together in one accord and agree under one seal, unified. And the paperwork that we've sent in on our indictment had 17 unified state seals. This next paper going in now is going to have 30, Well, we may have 30. I'm not sure the dateline, how it's going to work, but we may have 30 on there. And by the end of the month, by the end of this month, we will have at minimum 41 state seals. Now, that's pressure built. Now, when they look at that and they see geographically, this is real in every single state coming up out of the counties. It is the people's grassroots movement to save this nation. They're going to see that.
Okay, now,
that's
so
pressure.
In other words, the time frame is that the fun and game starts this coming week.
Well, I think the next 30 days is the, I think the pressure cooker is going to blow off in the next 30 days. I think they're going to break. And if they don't break, we will be at the United States Supreme Court's door.
They try to keep this stuff out of the record. What we've been able to do is keep it in the record. You know, when they pull papers out of court, that's a crime. We send them back. We tell them you have to put them in. And then we also send them higher. So what happens is, look, a conspiracy only works amongst a few. The more people you have in the conspiracy, the more chances it's going to blow up in your face. Now, the reason that these judges and these clerks and stuff want to purge the record is because that record is their hangman's noose. They can't leave that record laid there because when this thing breaks, their names are on that. Those are crimes that they committed that they have to answer. And so what we're doing is every time a judge misbehaves, we send it to us. And when they misbehave, we go up above their head. So we're climbing that ladder. I don't think anybody has ever, ever climbed that ladder on the record as we have. Now, they try to take us out.
With the pressure and the people behind. Yep.
Right. And we have all the states behind us. We're going to have all of them very shortly. We're going to have all 50 states. And that's something you're not going to be – look, the people are the authority. We the people, we are the government. They're not the government. We're the government. That's what people have to get in their heads. When we talk, when E.F. Hutton talk, people listen. Well, when the people talk, the government has to listen. You see, now we're taking our rightful authority. Mommy and daddy are home. You know what I mean? It's time to put the mice back in the cage. And that's what this is about. We have to speak like that, and we speak with authority. Look, they came out and they said, you guys better get some legal help because you're going to face unfortunate legal consequences. We turned around in 24 hours, wrote them a letter and said, you guys better check your legal help because you're going to face unfortunate consequences. You know what we got back? Silence. You know what that means? They had nothing else to say. They have not – listen, they would have come out and arrested us a long time ago except for we're following – their own procedures, and we're putting people based on that time-honored court procedure. They can't deny us. Now, they can pull all kinds of nasty stuff and try to work out, but we got too many people watching, and too many times it's going, and it's over, it's documenting. You know, we've never had the ability to communicate like we do today with the computer. This is a game changer that we're into now. This is a lot of pressure, and look, we don't need to talk like some people are saying. We need to throw the system out. It doesn't work. It does work. What you got to do is you got to get the tyrannous people out of it. The procedures are all in place. They're not following them. They're giving us equity courts instead of common law courts. You know, lawful courts. All we have to do. Listen, the truth will prevail as law. You know what we're doing? We're proclaiming the truth. And when you look at it, you can tell it's the truth, and that's why so many people are jumping off of this. You know why? Because it's simple and it's pure. And all that statutory bullcrap, you can throw it right out the window, and it makes sense because, look, at the biggest things in life are the simple things. You know, eventually we're going to find out that water will be fuel. Water will be air. It's simple stuff, you know? It's H2O. That's what we are. We're going to get it right down to the fundamental principles, and that's why it's really and true. Because when you read and you see what we're saying and how we're doing it, we basically went back to the fundamental principles. You know, they want to be Bill Clinton. They want to go, what is the meaning of this? You know what I mean? But we tell them what the meaning of this is because we're the ones that wrote that meeting. And so, yeah, you come to daddy if you want to know. We'll tell you because we're there. Pete, listen, liberty takes maturity. You know?
Well, in other words, where we're at
one of the reasons they were able to get away what they did.
We're just about to light the fuse to the fireworks, basically. Is that what you're telling me?
Sir. Huh? Yes. It's been building to this. and one for under the radar, I believe, is the criminal organization. They try to count people, and they don't understand where the rubber meets the road. They go, I got three people in this county. You only got so many people in that state. What they don't understand is what they're counting is the mustard seed, and they missed it. And by the time they realize what happened, this thing is the truth. Because
and
they
underestimated
the power of the people.
One major thing, and where we are about to go, is where no one has ever gone before. This has never been done in the history of the United States. We are about, within the next 30 to 45 days, if it's necessary, and personally, I don't think it's going to be necessary. I think they're going to break before we get to this point. But if we have to, we're going to get to this point. No one has ever served a writ of mandamus on the United States Supreme Court. Nobody. And if they fail to respond within 7 days of that writ of mandamus, we will then file a quoanto. And no one has ever filed a quoanto on the United States Supreme Court. That'll be the first time in history. And on top of that, it's just not a couple of people. It's just not New York with one seal that's unified, which means 62 counties behind that one seal. It is going to be, hopefully, 50 seals. We believe from our counts and working with the states and seeing where they're running for, you know, to get the states constituted, it looks like we're going to have somewhere between 46 and 50 states within the next 30 to 45 days. Now, I'd like to say we're going to do it in 30 days, but we have some other steps we have to succeed at, complete, and move on to the next step before we get to that final step. So somewhere within the 30 to 45 days range, we will be going to the Supreme Court, if that's necessary, with paperwork, filing upon them with 50 seals from 50 states, meaning 3,142 counties, people in all of those counties saying, we require you to obey the law and do the will of the people. That's pressure, and it's a pressure buildup as we're moving it. The momentum is there. They see it. They know it. Okay? And it's got to happen. Now, if we fail, that means that the noose is so tight, there's only one other thing left here in America, and we're not going to talk about it. You know, we'll just wait to see what they do.
Yes. Hey, well, that'll be a mistake on their part. But
yes.
Well, I was just kind of curious as to where it was at, and the only way I know to find out is to ask real direct, obtuse questions, and usually I get one or two things. Somebody hangs the phone up and tells me what I can do with myself, or they back and say, oh, no, we're ready. We're locked, loaded, the gun's been greased, and we're getting ready to pull the trigger. And that's basically what a lot of people have been waiting for this, okay?
Absolutely. That's why they got to join up with us now and get involved.
And let me tell
absolutely.
You something.
Absolutely. Already signed up.
Listen.
Yep, I know.
Well,
yep.
This has been very, very fortunate. I believe God has been on our side because, you know, when Prudente came out and framed this battle, she said, oh, the common law has been abrogated in New York State by the legislator. Do you realize what that statement says? How is she? We have to keep repeating
me up.
Judge Prudente says that the common law is abrogated in New York State by the legislator. And you know what? She's right. That's what they believe. They believe that they can legislate away our unalienable rights. That's what that says.
Yeah.
And is that true?
Oh.
No, that's a lie from hell. And if she believes that, you know what? That was a treasonous statement. I tell you what, when we get up to the Supreme Court, if it even goes that far, that lady will be packing her bags going back to Norway or wherever she got her law degree because that's where she first studied.
After she serves her life in prison.
She is not an American. That's why she can say that. She doesn't understand.
Well, here's something that goes along with what you're talking about. I've been talking to people behind your back, or however you want to look at it, and finding out things. And I'll be talking to one of the best legalists on the planet, as well as I've also got some intel that I'm going to pop in that supports some of what you're doing, and I think you'll like hearing it. I'll do that after, I guess, we're at the top of the hour. And,
yes, we are.
You know that there's more support than you think.
Yes.
Some that you don't know about. Okay.
Sounds good.
Right.
We like to hear that.
Well, that's what makes things so beautiful now, doesn't it?
Right. Okay. We'll be back in about 7 or 8 minutes with John, Gerard, and Drake again. Hi all, and welcome to the final hour this evening with Drake and our special guests this evening, Gerard and John from the Common Law Grand Jury in New York. I'll just find John. There he is.
Unmuted.
Hi, we're all back.
I'm back.
Yeah, I'm here.
Good.
Hello. Hey. As I said just before we went on the break, there's some things that I've been checking on. Now, we had a post not too long ago about Civil War being declared and calling out the Grand Old Army and all this other happy horse manure. That was horse hockey. Something to give everybody false hope is what my suspicion of it was. Found out that General Hamm didn't know much about it either, and that sort of, you know, he's supposed to be leading the parade, and that just kind of tore it up. But on that, I decided to do some checking, and I got with some people, and come to find out that there's a whole bunch of people who are willing to assist at the appropriate time in the appropriate places. So don't be surprised if somebody walks up with credentials and says, how can I assist?
Well, we kind of hope that that kind of thing will eventually happen. And
this is different than hoping. I'm talking
about good. My hope is coming to reality.
This is going to happen, okay?
I agree.
Well,
look, my hope is becoming reality. But the thing is, yeah, is there are a lot of people out there doing some other things, and they need to be doing those other things, and we need to be working together ultimately as far as supporting each other. We're doing what we understand. Other people are doing what they understand. And there's other people, like you say, that's ready to do certain things that we're not even aware of, and that's a good thing. And we'll get this job done because the American people need to work together and just get the job done. That's what we have to do.
I agree.
I agree, John. John.
Yeah.
Hawaii.
Yes.
I don't know whether you're aware, we had quite a special guest on a couple of weeks back.
Okay.
Have they formulated any common law grand
jury?
Hawaii.
Hawaii's setting up to run the election out there. I think they got five counties. They're running the entire state either in 719 or 723. They will be done before the end of this month. They'll be done by the 23rd of this month.
Right, okay. Thanks for that. I don't know whether you're aware, but Hawaii has gone to the courts to declare themselves as a sovereign nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't hear about that, yeah.
Yes, they're stepping out of the system altogether. All right.
I think that'll look at it. If the people are successful, and I do believe we will be successful, but if we're successful, I think whatever they're doing in Hawaii, they may change their thinking, you know. But if they want to succeed from the union, and at that point, they're welcome to do that too, because people are free, and they need to do what they believe they got to do. But I think if we unite and work together, and Hawaii is working with us, I think that'll solve all of our problems.
Right. Is New York sort of the main common law grand jury where everything sort of filters through there, or is there a lot more cooperation with other counties and such?
Well, you know, New York as a whole, you know, ultimately New York is the birthplace of liberty, really. It's the place where the debates took place, and it's, you know, where the debates are in the Federalist Papers. And it's the beginning of liberty, ultimately, is New York. And, of course, there are 13 colonies. So right now, that is where the big war is. We didn't plan it that way. We happen to be in New York, and we're taking it forward. Yep. And I believe that you know, the people of New York here, the group that is working with us in the courts and through the paperwork, and we do have some people out of California that help us, and a few other places, Florida. You know, we get a lot of advice and thoughts and different things. But this is where the focus of the paperwork has taken place. Obviously, you know, we've went into the courts. Florida has gone into the courts too. They took it from a different perspective, going after the commissioners, and it's because the commissioners stopped them from getting into the courts. You see, here in New York, we got the ideal thing. We couldn't have asked for it better. The judges stopped us from going in, and there couldn't have been a better situation than that. Not only that, the fact that they had the audacity to pull papers out of a file, and they're used to doing this. I mean, this is a common thing in a court. You go into a court, you file papers, and you file a case. And as you go into the things, if you ever go back to check your case, you'll find out that they've pulled papers out because they don't want them there. They've pulled our papers out on past cases and send them back to us. We rewrite new papers and add them back in and send them back and indict them on that. Of course, not indict them, but make the point that they made they did something illegal. We put it right back into the record. So, you know, this is where ground zero is in New York, I think.
We were ahead of the curve because we started, and that kind of put us ahead of being in court first. Although some states have, like he says, Florida really did catch up, but of course their battle lines were drawn, you know, by the commissioners. And you don't know where your battle lines are going to be because look at we're the people, and we have to react to that to the resistance that we get. We're not going out there, you know, looking for a fight. We're certainly not backing down from what they give us. And so Florida ended up getting framed a little different, but ultimately it's the same. You know what I mean? And it doesn't matter if Florida prevails first or us. It has implications nationwide, and we are the unified common law grand jury, and that's what it's about. We're unified as the people. We are the government, and we are unified. And so that's the significance of that.
John, what would you say to people that state that you can't win in their courts?
Oh,
you're
very
playing
simply.
Their system.
Yes. Look, at the, in a federal level especially, those people are chess players. The state level, I'm not even sure they know how to play checkers. But when you're up there in the state level, I've had two experiences in the federal courts personally where we did cases. We won both of them, and we won them very quickly, hands down. And the reason why we won it is because we defined very clearly in the courts the difference between equity and law. And we made it clear where we were coming from, that we were coming in as the people, and we defined the people as we get it out of the preamble of the Constitution. We the people did ordain and establish this Constitution for you guys, for the United States of America. And so we define ourselves as the people. That gives us standing. We open up a court of record. In this court of record, we're doing this or whatever the paperwork may be. And so once you establish that, and then they try to hijack you over into this chancery court, which operates under equity. And by the way, I was just listening today to some tapes for the Anti-Federalist Papers. I'm going through them over and over and over again to try to understand, you know, the arguments and the debates that took place with our founding fathers and what conclusions they came up with. And, of course, the conclusions are found in the Constitution, but they explain these things. And they spoke of these kind of things taking place even way back then. They were concerned about the equity courts already operating in the United States. And they were arguing Article 3 when Article 3 was being constructed. And they were saying, wait a second here. You know, we've got this situation set up with the wording, and you got law and equity together, and then the laws of the United States. And it's very confusing on where that's at and where it's going to end up and how the chancery courts come to play in this whole thing. And so eventually they disconnected that part and they moved it to another place, which is in Article 6, which defined the law of the land as the Constitution, which is common law. The word law that they use is defined in Black's Law Dictionary as common law. And so you have law and you got equity. Now, equity was to work the process of the UCC, work bankruptcy courts, international situations of admiralty or maritime. That's all under equity. But chancery was never part of it. But it did creep in here. It came in from England. And what happened is when the king overruled and took control of the courts and suppressed the juries, What he did, because he couldn't be around a rule in every case everywhere, he appointed chancellors, and he created the chancery court. Now, they did the will of the king. The king wrote the law and put the law down, and they did the will of the king. But when they came to a situation that there was no law, they had the power to make it up themselves. And here they brought this into America, and it was operating at the same time the Constitution was being hammered out. And they were debating that problem at the time. And but it was never meant that that chancery should continue. But it did continue throughout the United States and eventually fell under the umbrella of equity, and equity overtook law, and you don't have law anymore in the United States. But when you lay it out on the paper and you let them know that you know what the fraud is and they become liable to that fraud, now it's a whole different story, and they don't want that in their paperwork. We're putting it in there right now as the grand jury through informations and through the indictments. So we're laying it all out, and they don't like that.
Right. Another question for you, John. Can you describe the difference between de jure and de facto? I know that man is government, but how does one obtain the jurisdiction to form the common law court? Must we be
well,
of a different status?
Here's the key thing to jurisdiction. You know, a lot of people are concerned. They'll say, well, look at the federal courts. They're not really the right jurisdiction. They're flying the admiralty flag. They have a different name. They call themselves, the District Court of the United States, I think they call themselves, or the United States District Court, that may be it, which brings them into the corporate level side. And so people will argue the point and say, that's not the right court. And we got a searcher court. I've talked with people who told me that they did find a court. One of them was in, I think they said Hawaii, but some other state. And I think they said there was one in Pennsylvania. And I also heard someone say there was one in Washington, D.C. But the fact of the matter is this. Every court, when the United States Constitution was written, it created one United States Supreme Court with 9 justices, just one. And then all inferior courts necessary in order to work the process, because you have to go through the inferior courts in order to get to the United States Supreme Court. So they created the federal courts. That's called an Article III court. And when you go back, any federal court anywhere traces itself back to an Article III court. You can't get away from it because Congress didn't have the authority to create any other court other than that one Article III court, which they can create as many as they need in order for people to have access to those courts. When our founding fathers were debating this situation, one of the conclusions they came up with and the concerns was the people having access to the courts. And they required that all the courts that, when they opened the courts up and set them up throughout the 13 colonies, and as we grew the same way, they wanted to make sure that there was a court at least within one day's travel from anybody within the Union. And so that's the process that they were setting up and working on. Today, we have a court in every county, and it works out because of population. Now, there are some counties, like in Alaska, there's some up in Maine, and some other places that have some very rural areas that there are none, no courts, but they have to come to another county to get to it. But generally speaking, courts are accessible to the people, and most of us can get to the courthouse in an hour or so. So we have access to it. But all of the federal courts, every single one of them, there is no authority anywhere to create a court other than the Article III court, and every federal court traces its beginnings to that level, which puts them into a court of law and a court of equity. So that's what you have. When you walk into that court, you take control of that court and bring it into law, and you bring the jurisdiction. You don't move anywhere till that judge understands the jurisdiction we're in, and you don't let his feet off the fire until he agrees to that. I go as far as we sue any judge, and they know it. That's why we win. The next process, when we walk out of that court, we write the papers. If we have to, we do a writ of error. We turn things around, and we start to go after the judge. They understand that in the court, not under UCC. We're going right into court. And that's why they dismiss the cases, and that's why we win.
Right, okay. John, could you please explain the difference between constituting a common law grand jury in a county and actually forming and populating a common law grand jury in a county?
Right. Well, what we're doing, when we say we're constituting it, it means that we're coming together as a people and we're agreeing that we want to do this in this county, we want to bring it back, and we're going to do it. We're going to be the muscle to do it, and we'll work together. And then we do a declaration. We do affidavits, three people swearing that that this process took place, that the people came together on a certain date. They did by the showing of their hands. It was unanimous or an overwhelming majority, and they agreed. Then there's three signatures on the declarations with four pages behind that. It's a five-page document. The four pages give the authority, what authority we the people act upon. And the front page, of course, is the declaration that the common law grand jury has been reconstituted. In other words, brought back into being right here in this county. And this is the will of the people. Now, that's bringing together the idea of the grand jury. And then we're forming with that process to get access into the courts. We're building the administrative process in each court. Each court will have an administrative process separate from the government. We will draw funds from the government through the what is that, I forget the name of that, Gerard. Do you remember the individual who puts the funding out? Anyway, we would draw funds off the state, and then the state we would then have to be accountable for how we spend those monies. We do the salaries and whatever the cost factors to keep the jury going and to run all that stuff. The controller, that's
but
what it is.
We're not seating a jury per se. We're not having
right. That's what that's the second part of
this. They don't understand what we're doing is we're bringing the administrative process in. We're asking people to put their name in the jury pool so that when it's time to constitute a jury, we will call from a pool of volunteers first, and then we'll go into the voting registration, whatever, the way they do it now, to call people randomly. That's the point, to have random people serve these juries. We are not sitting juries in counties right now. What we're doing is we're saying we, the people, expect to have a jury of our peers under common law, and this is the process that we're putting in to facilitate that. We are not sitting juries, though. We can't sit juries until we get our room in the court.
With the exception of the people that are working this process as the administrators and volunteers and people just helping that don't plan to be administrators. We got a lot of people who don't plan to be administrators. They're happy with their job or whatever. Right. They're not looking to take that on. But we do have people who are interested. But generally speaking, as a whole, across the state or across a group of states or across the entire nation, when we come together as a people, in this case, we become the grand jury only for this process to get the people in the court. So we do come together as the grand jury under that condition and to make a decision. But once we get in, we're no longer going to sit as a grand jury. We're not qualified any longer because we are the investigative arm of the grand jury. We already believe them guilty, and we're going to take the process if we're going to indict, if we think they should be indicted, like a prosecutor might think. We would take that process and put it before the grand jury, 25 individuals, and try to convince those 25 people to indict. It's up to those 25 people to look at the evidence and make the decision, and they may not go the way we think so either. So we're not going to be that grand jury, and we obviously can't sit on the trial jury anymore, at least not while we're holding these positions, because, again, we're already prejudiced against the individual going into the court because we brought them there. But as far as dealing with getting access into the court, that's the only time in our career of this system that we would sit as a grand jury, with the one other exception, and that is when we deal with the judges, and when we deal with the assembly and the Senate, the state assembly and the state Senate, when we deal with those people and the governor's office, if we have to act as a grand jury, then we will. For that purpose. And that would mean that all the administrators of New York State, four for every county, as many as we have at the time that it happens, but four for every county, generally speaking, would come together to make that decision on what we're going to do. And if we have to indict the entire Senate for not obeying the people, the law, the Constitution, then we're going to bring that up, and I think we'll do it.
Right,
and maybe without them there making laws for a while, we'll be a lot more freer.
Yes.
This it's like a ballpark question, really. To become a jury member, is there much learning involved, and how long would it take an average person?
Well, everyone should get re-educated, or educated for the first time, shall I say, in civics and understanding. We have a free course we're putting together. It's a civics course. We hope to have it up soon. It's already written. It's done. It's been given to the techs. The techs are getting back to us with a price, and then, you know, we're trying to drum up some money to pay for this now. But we hope to have it up very, very soon. And
that's
anybody can take that course. We want to entice people to take that course. But the purpose of the course was written for the administrators of the common law grand jury, for them to be educated. Now, the education of the people to sit on a grand jury or a jury, you know, if you go into Lysander Spooner's essay on the jury, you will find that he spoke of the people being far more qualified, even though they couldn't even read or write. They were far more qualified to judge their peers than anybody that was sitting in a court, any of these judges or anybody else. And that was his position, and he made some really good arguments about that, and that's the way the jury goes. When we bring people into the system, we will give them the principles, we'll give them the two major maxims, we'll spend 8 hours talking about things, we'll show them different film clips on liberty and different things. They're qualified already, as long as they're working with three things in their hearts and their minds, a sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. If they make their decision, whatever that may be, with those three things in mind, then they've done a good job and they'll be able to sleep that night.
Right. Are you aware, well, there's a nationwide effort done by Mr. LaRouche to impeach the current president. Will the common law people be involved with that, do you feel?
I'm not aware of anything about it. I don't know anything about it, so I couldn't comment. Right. I know, Gerard, are you aware of that?
I know that they want to impeach, but you know, as far as the common law grand jury doing it, we have to be in the courts and they have to bring it before us. And
we will indict any case brought before us.
But before you'd go that high,
you'd want all 50 states involved.
Yes.
And we're working like, you know, day and night to get to that point, and it's going to be here in the next 30 or so days, roughly speaking.
Very good. That's fantastic.
I just want to clear one thing up, you know, as far as the jury goes. You know, the course we have is very extensive, and it's designed to train administrators to be that investigative arm and to administer the jury. When the jury is constituted for a case, whether it's a grand jury or a trial jury, that administration will take a time, just like the government does now, and educate those people what their duty is. See, the difference is the judge and the prosecutor will not be tampering with that jury, and we will educate them that they will rule on the case and the law, you know what I mean, and whether or not it is the law. So they're going to get, when a juror comes in and gets picked for jury duty, he's going to get probably 8 hours of orientation to put him in the right mind and let him know that, look, you rule on the law, you rule on whether it's being applied properly, you rule on the whole thing, and we even want them to rule on the sentencing thereof. You know, not only innocent and guilty, but the restitution or the sentence of that should all be done by your peers, not by some chancellor sitting up on a bench. So that's the difference. You know what I mean? You will no longer hear that they can indict a ham sandwich. The trouble today is that's exactly true. They can indict a ham sandwich because they tell the jury you're only going to rule on the facts, not whether or not they're being misapplied or not. We just want to know, you know, look at the evidence. We caught them with the picture. We got the evidence, but never mind the extenuating circumstances. And that's what they're doing with juries today. They're muzzling them.
Yes, certainly are. A couple of questions for Drake. You still there?
No, I was sleeping.
Sorry. Drake, what's the difference between normal martial law and medical martial law?
You're not going to experience either. You're going to experience constitutional martial law if it's ever declared. And there's a big difference between that one and the other two. The other two primarily are designated to individuals rather than group or even an association. The constitutional martial law is one where the very foundation of the Constitution is in jeopardy, and that goes along with a declaration of national emergency and generally war, declaration of war. The problems we've got with all that is that you probably ain't gonna see it. I don't see it being necessary under any circumstances so far. It's a slim possibility, though. Okay.
If martial law is declared in Texas, will the military step up to the plate and uphold their oath?
Well, yes, and there's this little problem with that. The feds can't say that Texas all by itself is under martial law, and there's a reason for all this. You can have a state of emergency, but you can't have martial law. You can implement certain controls that seem like martial law, like checkpoints and stuff, where they want to make sure you ain't carrying off granny's EV or something. However, there's a couple of little things. One that I mentioned is that you don't mess with Texas, and I will respectfully suggest that if the Fed doesn't want to lose Texas and become a refuge on their own, that they best mind their P's and Q's. Manners are acceptable, you know, and if you don't abide by it, shame on you. You got another one?
Yeah. Is the UN in staging mode in the USA right now? Why the public display of UN vehicles?
That's called fear porn. And you got to remember something. The UN doesn't have its own people. It borrows people from everywhere. Any kind of mother-in-law that can sit and drive a truck, and they got to pay them and this and that, and they usually send the bill to somebody else anyway. I mean, they're, the UN, as everybody's familiar with it, pretty much, I don't know. I would suggest you disregard the UN in general. It has not done anything of any consequence that it was originally chartered to do, that I know of. It has done everything opposite, and that goes to the secret paperwork involved with the UN. Now, the thing is this. The UN that we've got now is going to be disbanded by force if necessary, but disbanded. There'll be a mirror of the present UN in another country that will abide by the original charter parameters that this UN we have here now was supposed to follow, the one that they abandoned and decided to be their own little god and all that stuff. Okay?
Yeah. If someone who has claimed their sovereignty was fighting a case against the IRS, could they file charges of extortion against the IRS for trying to force them to pay money under threat of financial ruin?
Of course. Anybody that's dealing with the IRS has to know two things. One, it's not a government agency. Number two, it is a private entity. Number three, it's not even based within the continental United States. Number four, there are no provisions for a collection agency within the Constitution. Thus, the IRS does not have the legal right to implement the coercion that they use as a regular standard business procedure. The next part of it is that I would use the same excuses that Lois Lerner has been using and expressed that due to the fact that they don't know what they're doing, you will not comply with them until they do know what they're doing. Now, you can make a legal case out of that, and that would be really a mother for a judge to consider, and I would make that suggestion. Anybody out there has got the money to be able to support a lawyer long enough to get that through could really screw up, you know, they'd be concentrating on that and then leave John alone. They just signed his John's paperwork and just, oh man, this is more than I can stand. I'm busy, you know. So humor aside, the seriousness of it is simple. You have to attend to things in a correct manner. Now, John's tried to elucidate on this. I'm going to give you a little piece of questionability. None of your wages, your earnings, your direct earnings, are taxable. Now, you go look it up. It's constitutional law. It's in there. If need be, we can start posting stuff that definitely will wrinkle everybody's starch in terms of these official agencies that think they're God. Okay?
Okay. Thanks for that, Drake. Question for John.
Yeah.
A certain person recently said you were putting jury members at risk. Can you reply to that, please?
Yeah, that individual quoted a case out in, I think it was Michigan, and I did pull that case up and read it, and it said quite differently what he was talking about, because he spoke about going into the courts. He said, we don't have standing, and we haven't established our standing. And he says that we have to file declarations and do certain things, jump through certain hoops. And our position is we're not going to give any consideration of reality to fiction or fantasy, because it's all fiction, it's all fantasy, it's fraud on the court, it's fraud on the people. And we lay that out in every paper we write. We establish our standing as the people. You can't get any higher than that. For someone to say I'm sovereign, I'm a son of God, and I was born of I'm of the flesh, and I was born of the soil, and I mean all that is just wasting time, in my opinion. We used to do that. We were trained. You know, when we were looking at common law in the beginning, that's what we were learning, and we used some of that stuff, and it didn't get us anywhere. And we did declarations. I did a declaration. Gerard did a declaration. It didn't help the court case we were in. We brought it into the court case. They couldn't care less. But you know what? Since we've established the fact of just revealing the fraud, defining who we are, maintaining our jurisdiction, letting them know the standing is that of the people, we have never had a problem. Now, the case that he is quoting on that case in Michigan, he says we're doing what they're doing. That case was about a person who got a traffic infraction, and they fought the traffic infraction, and two of friends or whoever, whatever relationship that was with this woman had, they wanted to represent this woman in the court, and the judge wouldn't let them do it. So there was a big battle on that, and ultimately she was found guilty of the traffic infraction. And they fined her $26 fine and a $43 court cost. Well, they weren't happy with that. Around the time of the hearing, around the time of when the hearing for the court case came up, right before that, these two people, individuals, they went to some kind of a conference that was out there in Michigan. I think it was a Michigan case or a Missouri case. I don't remember. But anyway, they went to a conference which was teaching people about the grand jury. And they picked that up right away. They claimed to have gotten 24 people together, but only 12 people were indicted, so it seems like they didn't even have the right number of people to begin with, and it should have been 25. But what they did is they manipulated the people, and they convicted the judge, and they fined him $10.8 million and then filed papers to collect that $10.8 million. They then went to the judge, and they said to the judge to not rule against this woman. This is right before the court case was coming up, I think, or maybe right after, one or the other, either to dismiss it or not allow it to go through. And if he didn't obey, that they would indict him for the $10.8 million. And, of course, the judge ignored it. They went through an indictment, and they filed the papers, and they filed a lien, and then these people were arrested. And I think it was called tampering is what they got them for. They gave the 12 people 2 years in jail, and these two individuals got 7 years apiece in jail. And then the woman, of course, that was involved with this, she spent, I guess, with the 12, 2 years in jail. And that was the whole process. We don't do those things. It's not the grand jury's job to file anything on the UCC, you know, commercial stuff or liens or to threaten them with money or anything of that nature. The grand jury's job is only to write, true bills, whether it be an indictment, a presentment, or an information, and put it into the court, and the court is to execute that without question. That's the job of the grand jury. And anybody out there that's putting something like that together, if they were to come before a jury that I was with, I would think that the jury would find them guilty of extortion. Okay, I would have found those people guilty of extortion, and it would have been a much harsher charge against those people than tampering, and I probably would have got them for tampering too. They did a wrongdoing. They needed to go to jail anyway because they did a wrongdoing. Period. There's nothing. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. We don't do anything like that.
Right. Thanks for that, John. Question for Drake. With China buying up our country, how much influence will they be able to exert on how this country is run?
Well, as anybody knows, money talks, BS walks. Let's see here. wholly owned subsidiary of, there are a lot of things going on, and the pressures are going to come from several different directions. China will be able to influence some things. Now, there are some things that have changed since most people were familiar with the old China. Things are have changed and are in the process of changing for the better. This is also true of Russia. A lot of people look at that and they go, ooh, enemies. Yeah, well, maybe not. And I'm going to allow the playing field to play out so that I'm not going to be the one saying, ooh, China is our new hero, or look at Putin, man, he's, or any of that. I'm looking at it this way. Things are in motion. Things are being attended to and taken care of in such a manner that the truth is going to come out, first of all, the hard way, and secondly, the underlying obligations to that truth is going to be pretty awesome. When people find out what the intent and purpose of what's going on is, they'll be overjoyed. So expect a little surprise, a little twist at the end of the story kind of thing. Expect to start seeing things officially within about the same time frame that John was talking about, from what I've been getting, okay?
Drake, what are the steps needed to find out if your home mortgage is an illegal one, and if so, to get out of it? Maybe John can answer that.
There's two things you need to do. Number one, make sure you got clear, and by clear I mean no encumbrances of any kind other than the mortgage holder. That's first. Number two, if you wish to secure that, go through the alloidal process in such a manner, and you got to do it right, in such a manner that you come out with the only exception to a total impervious ownership title, okay, is the encumbrance that you have with the lender that has provided you with the place to live. At that point, you have the situation of being immune pretty much to anything else. That's very, very broad. John?
One of the key things and this is the only time I would tell someone that they might want to use the fiction against them, and this is on personal basis when people come after when they come after the people for a mortgage, because the whole thing is a fraud. And the bottom line is this: within 72 hours, or shall I say 72 hours after that so-called contract is signed, it's not a contract. What's really being signed is a release of money from your SQ funds. And unless the money's coming from a private source, but if it's coming through the government, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, all that stuff, what you're doing is you're releasing funds from your Sescu account. So the people who put the mortgage together, they've already got their percentage on setting up the mortgage and going through what they call a mortgage and going through this whole process. They've already made their money. They made their percentage. They made their closing fees. And now they take your signature. They bring it to the Fed window and they get the money from the Fed and then they disperse it however they're going to disperse it. And everything's done and you don't owe anything to anybody. When you bring this into the court, if you understand how to deal with this and put this into the court, they'll run.
Right, thanks for that, John. John, are you familiar with the full manual for notaries? There is one,
you know,
just, I don't know, yeah,
the... Did you say four notaries?
Familiar with the full manual for notaries?
Oh, no, I'm not. No,
I've
never
looked
into that.
Yeah, there is one just found this past week, and they have powers that people do not realize.
Yeah, I'm hearing that. I heard that three notaries can act as the magistrate for the court, and I don't know if that's true or not. And I've got to do some research to discover.
Right. Okay. Question for Drake. Is the U.S. government planning a terror attack on July the 28th?
I'm not going to guarantee the date, but they got several plans that they've been trying to pull off. So far, certain people have been able to stop them or cause them so much public problems that they decided it wouldn't be a good idea. Now, yeah, they're going to try something, and somewhere around that date, kind of watch for it. You should be able to recognize it because it's going to be bogus when it happens. The people watching, and there's a whole bunch of people watching this stuff real close, and they're going to expose it for what it is. So, you know, expect to understand that. Now, if we get the information in a timely manner, we will warn people what's going to happen. Now, we're going to start doing that on a regular basis. These people have been playing roughshod, doing whatever they damn well please with the lives of people that shouldn't be in jeopardized in any way, shape, or form. We're going to try to change that. So you might expect to see a little fireworks if they try to pull something and we know about it. Next.
Where are we? Can we get Peter Eyre on again? That's one of the questions.
I can ask him to see what he says.
Yes. It's about 9 months now since he was on. I think it was October. Drake, with all the illegal immigrants coming into the U.S., why hasn't the military stepped in and closed our borders, returned the people, and arrest everybody that's supposed to be arrested?
That's pretty simple. The feds want it this way. They've been ordered to stand back and watch by Obama. Now, that does not alleviate the governor of Texas from launching the National Guard when he's being invaded by whatever means. In other words, there are several forms of invasion, extraordinary amount of illegal aliens, refugees, whatever you want to call them, influxing into a certain area is defined as an invasion. Thus, he has the capability of superseding the power of the Fed through the use of the National Guard and telling them no. He has the power to station the National Guard at the border and turn the buses around and say, no, Mexico, you keep them. You think it's funny to send them here? How about you feed them? You know, this sort of thing can be done. I've offered to be nasty, and what I mean by that is gunfire. Now, there's two ways to do that. You can we can post people on our side of the border and just shoot anybody that comes across the fence. That's pretty obtuse and I think criminal in my considered opinion. Or we can exercise our National Guard every 2 weeks that these people come out and play camping and make the whole friggin' border a live fire zone. Now, I guarantee you, nobody is going to screw around when you got M60A1 or Abrams tanks or minefields, artillery fire. You ain't going to go playing in there. I guarantee you it will stop it. Now, we can close the border real quick. The reason it hasn't been done is because of what you're seeing now. Okay?
Yes. Do you think direct action units will be the eye and protective arm for the people?
Only if they're really needed, and only if they're correctly constituted and formatted. There's a variety of things that goes into that that people are not aware of, let alone the legalities. You're going to have to be put into a very special niche within constitutional authority in order to be able to act as an enforcement arm within a fourth branch. It's real tricky to do. I am waiting to use up some of the time of a guy that's very busy who happens to be an expert in all this, and that's part of what I discussed earlier with John. This is a situation that has to be handled correctly. I would much rather see it done peacefully through the courts than have to use gunfire or intimidation or force of arms and that sort of thing in order to accomplish the goal that could be done peacefully. I'd much rather see it done peacefully. I had enough war in Vietnam. Most of the guys that have been overseas recently also had enough of the fun and games. So they're not real willing or interested in doing this. However, most of the people I've talked to, even myself included, if, as a last resort, we don't have a choice, shame on anybody that gets in the way. Next.
Right. We're pretty much at near the end of the show. 6 minutes left. John, do you want to, and Gerard, do you want to spend a couple of minutes summing up?
Well, I'll just quickly say something, and then maybe Gerard can talk. And basically, you know, as many people that are concerned, if you're not involved in something, you know, there are a lot of different things going on. We, of course, believe that what we're doing is one of the most important things because we believe it's the power of the pen and the power of the people that really could save this nation, and we want to do it without bloodshed. And so people should get together and get themselves involved in what we're doing. Go to nationallibertyalliance.org, join up, support us, work with us, and just let's get this job done. Gerard, do you want to make any final statements?
Yeah, I just want to say if anybody has any doubts as to the way we operate, you go on to nationallibertyalliance.org and go on the breaking news page and read the letter that the judge sent us, the Jonathan Littman, the judge that made the order, Sotheby. He called us an entity and a group and all these things that tried to suck us into the corporate world, and read our response to him and tell me if you've ever seen anybody talk to a judge the way we talk to him and put him back into the box and put ourselves back in the box where we want to be. You know, he used very sneaky language, you know, calling us entities and groups and all that corporate stuff. And then we wrote back and said, we thought our words perfectly clear. What didn't you understand? We are not an entity. We are not a group. And we basically slapped him. And you don't see paperwork like that because we take it right back to the Constitution and we jam it right in their faces. And you know what? They can't answer because there is no answer. So I think that that's a very eye-opening, you know, piece of documents there to two that fit together. And you'll understand why they don't get us in their jurisdiction and why our paperwork stays in those courts, because it's so powerful.
Okay. Yes, thanks very much for that, Gerard. And thanks to both of you for taking the time to come on and update us. It sounds like things are really progressing, which is fantastic. Drake?
Appreciate you guys having us. Thank you.
I just got one to say. You're done.
All right, thanks for that, Drake. Well, that was a very interesting show. And once again, the website again, John?
NationalLibertyAlliance.org. And we have a Monday night conference call every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. People can come and ask questions there, and we always give an update every Monday.
All right. Thanks for that, John, once again.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gerard. Thanks to Drake. My name is Thomas Williams. We'll be back next week. Bye for now.